7BR Part Heard.
Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Eleanor Day, Chambers Paralegal, and this week I'm joined by Peter Egwai to discuss the Law Commission's recent consultation on reform of the communications offences. Peter's criminal practice is centred on the defence of serious crime, fraud and cybercrime. He has a particular interest in the intersection of technology and law, and he continues to develop his practice to represent the ever-growing number of cybercrime claimants and defendants within the civil and regulatory arena, including AML and advisory work. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Maybe we could sort of go back to basics before we get into the nitty-gritty, and you could just tell us what sort of behaviours are included within communications offences, because it's quite broad, isn't it?
Yeah, there are different ways in which communications offences could be captured. So you could capture communications offences under the Theatres Act, Public Order Act, but the Law Commission's consultation essentially focuses on malicious communications under Section 1 of the Malicious Communications Act and Section 127 of the Communications Act 2003, which is sending grossly offensive, indecent messages over a public communications network.
You mentioned there their paper, and we can focus on that in this episode. The Law Commission states at the beginning of it that the development of communication technology has far outpaced law reform. So in what ways are the general communications offences that you mentioned ill-suited to addressing the problems posed by modern communications?
Well, in the paper, the Law Commission say that the threshold for criminality, especially when applied to the online space, is often too low. And I'd agree with that. The problem is that the Malicious Communications Act 1988 was developed before the internet was really a part of everybody's day-to-day life. And the Communications Act 2003 was developed in an environment in which we were essentially using simple mobile phones with text messaging rather than the variety of apps and social media that we have now. So the difficulty is that these offences were essentially created before the technology that the Law Commission discuss in their paper nowadays were developed. Therefore, those offences aren't really capturing the various ways in which the new technologies, social media in particular, can be used.
Right. And how do we see these sorts of offences being prosecuted at the moment?
Well, there's a difficulty because the technological nature of malicious communications and Communications Act offences means that, firstly, the individual who communicates needs to be identified on platforms such as Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. That can sometimes be difficult because while it may seem as though a person is talking or insulting a person in the UK, they could live in Mogadishu, Mumbai or Minnesota. The difficulty first in identifying the individual is a challenge. And then also the social media networks actually are quite reluctant to share information about users. So sometimes, particularly in relation to Google, Facebook, we have to send letters of request and the letters of request aren't always responded to. And even then there are technological hurdles. Aside from that, there's the pressing difficulty, which we'll come to, about a term such as grossly offensive. What may be a joke or banter to one person might be an insult or a provocation to violence even for another.
Mm. Yeah, so you've just mentioned the term grossly offensive, and that, like you said, has attracted particular controversy. Perhaps you could explain some of those concerns, particularly around that the vagueness of it and the extent to which some are concerned that it may not be compatible with Article 10 rights.
The term grossly offensive attracts controversy because it's a term that's in the eye of the beholder. An individual could be grossly offensive and very funny. And to the audience that they were directing their message to, their audience loves them for that. Meanwhile, another individual who hears or sees such a message may not only be offended, they might be insulted, they might feel as though violence has been initiated on them. And in those circumstances, the vagueness of the term grossly offensive causes an issue because it means that a person, for example, a comedian, has no certainty when they engage in an action, what the outcomes of that action might be, because some people, as I said, may be grossly offensive while other people are giggling and applauding as loud as they can.
So the Law Commission, in considering how to reform these offences, they've considered all these various alternatives. I think they point to three in their consultation paper. And one of those is that they considered briefly is providing a statutory definition of grossly offensive. But I think they decided against that, as well as replacing some of the existing prescribed characteristics with a new characteristic termed abusive. So they've sort of put those to one side and provisionally settled on a harm-based approach. What do you think about that? And do you think it will help resolve some of the challenges?
Well, it depends what you mean by resolve. On one view, the harm-based approach could increase the number of people who fall to be captured by criminal offences. The harm-based approach, if I just outline it briefly, the writers of the report essentially put the harm as falling within five categories. So you have psychological and emotional harms. You have physiological harms, including suicide and self-harm. You have exclusion from public online space and corresponding feelings of isolation. So that might be cyberbullying. You have economic harms and then wider societal harms. Now, the viewpoint suggesting that the harm-based approach could resolve it takes a view that looking at the harms that are caused by communications is the way to go. Because at the moment, for example, if partner A sends partner B a sext message, for example, or sends a offensive joke into a WhatsApp, private WhatsApp group, they could be captured by the current offenses. They could per se be guilty of a section 127 offense because they've used a public communication network to communicate something that was grossly offensive. However, no harm was caused in those circumstances. So as I said, the harm-based approach could help by essentially increasing the number of people who'd be captured by criminality, but also by removing some behavior which currently could fall to be criminal, but under the harm-based approach wouldn't be. On the other viewpoint, thing about the harm-based approach is that an individual, for example, who makes a joke may consider that, well, there might be some people who likely be harmed by this joke. It's the nature of jokes. However, they may not be able to foresee all the ways in which a person could be harmed by that joke. But the harm-based approach would basically put them in a situation where when they said something, perhaps innocently, perhaps mischievously, they could cause more serious harm and then be prosecuted essentially for the harm that they'd caused. Really interesting topical example to think about is on Reddit recently, a group of people, essentially as a practical joke, pumped up the stock price of a company called GameSpot. They did it to cause economic harm to some hedge funds. They used a public communications network to do it. The harm-based approach is a question. The harm-based approach could potentially capture such individuals because they intended harm. But is that really what we as a society want to criminalize? Again, it's not a question for me, it's a question for the legislators, but there are different viewpoints. And one of the drawbacks with the harm-based approach is that it could have a chilling effect that could result in a situation where people don't use these beautiful and amazing technologies we have in a confident, enthusiastic, creative way because they're worried about what might happen, what harm might be caused. And that, in my view, is an issue because free speech means that you should be able to say the type of things that some people might find offensive and, in fact, some people might find harmful.
Well, I suppose that speaks to the heart of the issue, which is that it's really difficult for legislators to navigate a route between being specific, but not so prescriptive that the law could be outdated within 2 or 3 years, whilst also not being so broad that you end up criminalizing behavior which actually has no business being included within the scope of these offenses. So I was interested in what you think about the Law Commission's inclusion of a likely audience within their proposed offence, which is clearly an attempt to strike that balance, but which perhaps might prove a bit difficult to identify in practice in the age of the World Wide Web and mass usage of these huge platforms with enormous reach.
It's a great point. As I said, when these statutes were created, individuals didn't really have a way, unless they used broadcast media, which is regulated in its own way, they didn't really have a way to speak to the entire world at the same time. And that's essentially what social media does. It basically gives everybody, elderly person, young child, the ability to not only have their 15 minutes of fame, but to have their 15 million fans watching them closely. And the present situation is a challenge for the legislators, because the truth is they have no idea precisely what technology is going to come out in the future. We've seen recently, for example, a furore relating to Twitter, private company, using its power to essentially deplatform the most powerful office holder on the planet with no comebacks. There's nothing anyone can do. But there's two issues. The first is, it's a question for some people as to how these private companies are going to exercise that power. But for me, as a person who's a geek, essentially, I've seen these types of situations before. And the reality of it is, somebody somewhere in the world right now is programming and putting together a new piece of technology that may circumvent the ability for anybody to deplatform somebody. And it may be that the Malicious Communications Act, the Communications Act, and whatever act comes out as a response of this Law Commission paper could be rendered meaningless by a blockchain version of Twitter in which no one controls it and you're completely unable to identify who participates. It's those challenges that the legislators have to think about, because they have a job. They need to punish people who are committing criminal acts. But technology evolves in a way that, as time goes by, sometimes makes it harder for those people to be identified, for those people to be caught, and for the state to exercise its control over those platforms.
Do you think it's helpful to have communications offences dealt with separately in terms of legislation? I only ask because I read something, which I can't remember where now, very unhelpfully, but someone was suggesting that instead these sorts of communications offences should be incorporated into the relevant provisions in the Public Order Act, and that basically that should just be fleshed out to include these sorts of offences. I don't know what you think about that, or whether you think that actually, because they are uniquely complicated, they do deserve their own legislation.
Well, one of the reasons, for example, if you take Section 127 of the Communications Act. Strictly speaking, what it's actually criminalizing is using a public communications network to send indecent message, for example. Mm-hmm. And what the state is saying is, well, you can say this in your private space, but if you're going to do this over public infrastructure, that's a crime. So that might be one of the reasons why offenses other than the Public Order Act may be required in relation to dealing with some of these communications offences, because from a public policy point of view, the government essentially is saying we want to control the way in which our public communications infrastructure is used. Difficulty with that, of course, is that so much of what we do now goes over the public infrastructure. As I speak, I have a Google speaker in my room, and at any given point, information that I'm communicating in my home can travel over a public communications network. So it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that requires potentially specific laws to deal with technologically enabled offences, which these communications offences that the Law Commission is looking at essentially focuses on technologically enabled offences. And it's one of the reasons why they're trying to, or they're suggesting that the new offences should be technologically neutral, because they don't know what technology's around the corner.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I guess I was particularly interested in the section where they talked about cyber flashing and how they were suggesting that that should be incorporated within sexual offences, and that it was sort of essentially an issue of fair labelling, and that it's important that it's classified as a sexual offence, almost in a way more than it is a communications offence. And I just thought that was quite interesting, that placing of emphasis. I was just really interested in the way that they sort of distinguished cyber flashing as a sexual offence, but not a lot of other offences, which in theory could be sort of taken and sort of cut up and put in other pre-existing pieces of legislation.
Yeah, I see the point. I think cyber flashing, for example, they describe it in the paper, because one of the interesting things about cyber flashing is it, depending on how it's done, it isn't necessarily captured within Section 127, because the most common way which it's done is somebody using an Apple phone, essentially while they're sitting on a tube, uses the, I think it's the AirDrop app in the Apple phone, to essentially send over a private communications network, right? Because the AirDrop function would be a private communications network, a rude image to somebody else sitting on the train. And they do it for the purposes of perhaps getting gratification from seeing the shock on that person's face. At the moment, Section 127 wouldn't capture that, because it's over a private communications network. So the point that you make is well made, which is that some of these offences are technologically enabled, but they're simply technologically enabled versions of pre-existing crimes. And it may be that by focusing on updating existing offences to deal with emerging technology, that would be a more robust way of dealing with it. Because again, focusing on the technology itself is a very difficult thing, because the technology changes from day to day, whereas the desire, for example, to unlawfully sexually gratify oneself is a crime as old as time itself. So in the circumstances, you may be right. Focusing on it in that way might be far more manageable than trying to predict what the most common and popular social media platform will be in 5 years from now.
I feel like we've touched upon some of them already, but what are, do you think, some of the biggest challenges when drafting communications offences?
Well, the way I think of it is I look at communication between two people, between a person and a group of people, like being a game, you know, my turn, your turn. And the most popular game on the planet is football. So use that as an analogy for a moment. You learn the rules of the game of football, and if you break one of those rules in the game, there's a way for you to be punished. You know, there might be a foul, referee will give a yellow card, red card. But what the legislator's essentially trying to do is to try and figure out a way so that when the number 10 slide tackles the number 7 in an inappropriate way, they can be punished outside the actual game that's being played, right? And it's a really difficult thing to do, because the number 10 could have honestly and with very good intention made that slide tackle, made that challenge. And the number 7 could be rolling around in agony because they were really, really hurt by what took place. And what makes it even trickier is, of course, people dive and people feign injury. And you need to be able to create a fair system so that it isn't simply because the person is rolling around on the floor, and it isn't simply because a person launched into a slide tackle, but that you create a situation that's fair. And the difficulty with that is shown, again, to continue the analogy of football at the moment, is that we, in recent times, have seen the introduction of VAR. And there's arguments every single game about VAR, because it's not an easy problem to solve, because there are various different perspectives. And football, as with communication, in my view, is combative at times, is competitive. And as a consequence of that, sometimes people are going to get hurt, and sometimes people are going to hurt people without intending to. And one of the most beautiful things about the internet is you hear viewpoints and perspectives from so many different types of people, and anything that could inadvertently limit that, yeah, isn't the route to go down, in my opinion.
One of the other interesting things that I thought came out of the Law Commission's consultation paper was a suggestion, I think, that mainstream media wouldn't be subject to the reform, essentially. And I wondered what you thought about that within a harm-based approach, but also more broadly in terms of drawing that sort of distinction between forms of communication.
Yeah, well, in the consultation paper, they say, and this is a quote, "We do not intend for the proposed offence to cover regulated media such as the news media, broadcast media, and cinema. Our intention is that the publisher of an online newspaper article would not be caught by the proposed offence, but an individual who posts an abusive comment in response to the article would be caught." Now, there are 13-year-olds at the moment who have followings online in the millions. And the distinction between news media, broadcast media, and cinema compared to an individual with a widely listened to podcast, an individual with a widely followed TikTok account or a Twitter account or a blog or the various other ways in which people express themselves, in my view, might be difficult to maintain. Many people get their news from sources other than the BBC and the big broadcast media nowadays. Is it obvious that an individual who has more people subscribing to them than the circulation, for example, of the Express should be subject to concerns, stipulations, and punishment that the Express isn't subjected to? I think that, again, that's an example of, I wouldn't say old-fashioned thinking, I'd say that's an example of not taking into account the way that technology will develop, the way that technology is developing. The reality is that what we used to call new media is now just the media, and there will be new media that comes along not only very soon, but consistently. Human beings have a desire to make themselves heard, and that's unlikely to change. Obviously, the legislators, as I've said, have to combat online abuse. They have to combat insults. But the idea that the newspaper publishes an article online, which could be abusive, but they're not prosecuted, but an individual responding to what was posted might be, it seems strange to me. I can understand partly why they take that approach, because the newspapers, cinema are regulated in other ways. However, again, cinema, music, news is now consumed far more in the non-regulated space than it is in the regulated space. And that's likely to grow.
Well, one of the reasons that the Law Commission views news media as outside the scope of the proposed reform is that, like you mentioned, they are already subject to regulatory schemes. But they also point out that a free and independent press is crucial in a democratic society, which makes it difficult to justify imposing criminal liability. So it'll be interesting to see whether the consultees agree with that distinction between conventional regulated media and other more modern forms of communication, and the use of regulation versus criminalization, depending on the medium of communication.
Well, final point on that is, and this is again, the nature of the internet, is that, okay, an individual reads an article on a newspaper in a foreign country, perfectly legitimate to publish that article in that country. They engage in a back and forth conversation in the comment section. Strictly speaking, they're responding over a communications network in the UK. They're sending it from the UK, but they wouldn't be able to have that conversation. As I said, we live in a very different world, and I don't envy the legislators. It's a really difficult problem to solve. And if it was easily solvable, they should probably be working for Google and Facebook rather than the government. But the reality of it is that the free communication, free speech is a fundamental pillar of our democracy. And it's something that should only be curtailed, even indirectly, inadvertently, with great care. And I'm sure they'll take their care. I just worry.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see the results of the Law Commission's consultation and how this area of law develops. And I'm sure we wish them the best of luck with it. And we're very glad that it's not us having to do that job. And you'll be on hand, no doubt, to help us analyse these developments as they happen.
Thank you very much. It's been a great conversation.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. For more information and to listen to all of our previous episodes, please visit our website.